You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ricardo Mitrani, and this is the Best Practices Show with Kirk Perrin. Hey guys, you're watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're getting better at restorative dentistry, you're already seeing this conversation. It's about the terminal dentition and why it's so important. And today I've got one of the world experts, Dr. Ricardo Mitrani. I hope I said that right. He is amazing and brilliant, one of the most powerful speakers in the world on this subject from Spear Education. You do not want to miss this. So grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love it. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this show live on Facebook. So as you're watching it, if you have questions while you're watching the live broadcast, add them to the feed and I'll ask Ricardo directly. We'll get the answers straight from the master himself. Or if you're watching them later on, continue to add questions to the feed because we want you guys to get the most out of this as you're watching the Best Practices Show. Now, again, I can't even say this as well as I probably will try. I am so incredibly grateful for all the feedback, all the messages I get, the emails on shows that you guys want to see. And we are lining them up and doing the best we can to get all of these guys on and gals, these influencers. And so keep sending the suggestions to us. Also, the shares, everything. We are now up over 39,000 followers on Facebook, and over 150,000 of you guys are visiting us on iTunes. And I don't even know how that works, but we're having fun doing it. Now, our show today with our guest, Dr. Ricardo Mitrani. Now, this guy is amazing. Now, Ricardo, I'm going to brag about you for a little bit because you and I have known each other for years. I get the chance to see you speak all over the place, and you have done over 500 lectures all over the world. We met originally at the Seattle Study Club Symposium. You are on Spear faculty. I don't even know how you speak the way you speak. You're everywhere. I know who you are. A lot of our viewers know who you are. If somebody doesn't know who Ricardo Mitrani is, give us a little background. Who are you? I'm a dentist that practices dentistry and loves to lecture, loves to share what I know. Graduate from the University of Washington graduate prosthodontics program in the year 2000. And I have this love, passion for teaching. Once I finished my program in Seattle, I stayed there for a couple of extra years and then decided to move back home. Home for me is Mexico City. It's an awesome city. I would invite everybody to come and visit. It's a really cool town. And, you know, ever since I came back, I was putting lectures together. I was writing articles. And this passion on communicating information has always been there. And so that's what I do. I mean, I have the pleasure of doing clinical dentistry that I enjoy a lot. We have now four practices in Mexico.
And I have an incredible team of people that I'm privileged enough to lead. And that's going to be 3 years that I joined Spear Education, which has been, from a teaching perspective, a dream come true, you know, an incredible platform where we are able to, you know, reach out to a ton of people and essentially share breakthroughs in clinical dentistry, breakthroughs in what's happening. And so it's just a fun ride to be at, you know, I'm having a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just telling you, if you haven't seen this guy speak, you got to see him speak. Now, Ricardo, let's talk about the terminal dentition. Why is this such a powerful conversation in dentistry? And maybe define it for our younger listeners, because we have a lot of dental students watching now and an internet, like, let's all get on the same page as far as dental, you know, terminal dentition.
Yeah. So, you know, in fact, the term sometimes is a bit confusing, but essentially refers to, you know, those patients that have breakdown in their mouths, that have been exposed to, you know, disease. And we know that essentially the two large endemic diseases in dentistry are either caries or periodontal breakdown. And so these are patients that perhaps have neglected their teeth, you know, throughout a big chunk of their life, or have some type of systemic conditions, but lo and behold, are losing their teeth. And so when we essentially decide that a patient should no longer, or that the remaining teeth are no longer serviceable, we then elect to go through, you know, a restorative interdisciplinary path to essentially either A, have patients go through a removable denture, solution, or B, go for an implant solution. And this right there, Kirk, is pretty fascinating, because it's tough to communicate to patients what solutions we have available. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to communicate because even amongst us dentists, it's tough to communicate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we try to simplify as much as possible our message so that it becomes crystal clear. And the problem with simplification is falling in the trap of oversimplification. Because when you oversimplify, then you stop seeing fundamental elements that play into, you know, the equation. And so, again, having that discussion with patients may throw them off, may not give them, you know, all the elements that they need to understand to make a decision. But also in discussions with fellow dentists, if we don't go through the essential elements that we have to go through, again, we may end up neglecting some of these essential elements. And I often talk about the fine line that divides, on the one hand, you know, being negligent and not, you know, providing solutions to an existing problem, or B, over treating a condition that perhaps should not be, you know, treated in such an extent. And so this is what we do on a day-to-day basis. We come to work, everybody that works in dentistry, we come to work and we try to stay within that fine line, not to fall in the over-treatment, not to fall in the negligence. And so again, these patients that come in with what in their mind may be, because we get it all the time, patients will come in and say, hey, I want my teeth removed because I hate them.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not that bad. And so, again, how do we communicate this?
Right.
Now you asked the key question. We'll go to the how, but the key question is why? Why should we care, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we should care because there are millions and millions of patients out there that are in need to hear this and to get this type of treatment. And so, you know, some companies do an excellent job providing this type of information through, I'm sure everybody or many people in the audience has heard, you know, of franchises or companies, corporate entities such as Clear Choice, mm-hmm. that do a phenomenal job communicating to patients what the potential solutions are. They do a great job communicating, and that's super.
Right. You know?
But not everybody has the clear-cut message of what the patient is going through and what are the potential solutions that we may offer. And so again, the why is it critical for us dentists to know this? Because there's a ton of patients that are in dire need. And I think the more tools we have, you know, under our wing, we could better provide these type of services.
Yeah.
Even if we choose, by the way, not to treat these patients, but you know, you said you have a community of 30,000+ dentists. Then I don't know the demographics, but my assumption is that most of it are GPs, and then you may have a fair share of specialists. Do you have like a headcount? Do you have your demographics? Because it makes sense to cater this message now.
Yeah, well, you know, again, as it grows, it continues to grow through Christian Coachman and everybody else that's been such a valuable giver of information. It's hard for us to get some demographics around this. But the one thing we do know for sure, and Ricardo, comment on this, because I want to go back to what you said, like, you train some of the best dentists in the world. How important is really getting good at communication and how it relates to how well you treat? Because some dentists think, well, I need the technical training. I've found the better communicator you become, the better dentist you ultimately see. Is that true in your case? You know, I mean, or would you say it works in tandem, you know?
It does work in tandem, I'll tell you. We could have a full program on communication and how do we communicate who we are and what we do.
Right.
And the reality is that, you know, some phenomenal clinicians suck at communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have incredible communicators that suck clinically.
Right.
And so there has to be a sweet spot in which, you know, you work towards getting better clinically, but also you get work at getting better, you know, communicating. I'm pretty passionate at communication. In fact, you know, you hit me there on the head. In fact, it's not available in English, hopefully at some point, but I, some years ago, I did a TED talk essentially talking about communication. It's in Spanish. But the reason why I'm so, you know, obsessed, if you will, with communication is when I realized that we do such a bad job. We assume we're good communicating, but we're not. And being good at communication goes beyond, you know, waiting for a good reply on something that a patient asked. Being a good communicator, I'll show you this much, and perhaps a picture will say 1,000 words. We're sitting here in my office here, in my private office here in one of our clinics. I'm just going to move the camera, and I'm going to show the audience what says right there in my wall.
Yeah.
It says, the world is giving you answers each day. Learn to listen. So that's essentially written in a wall that nobody else but me sees every day.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I care to see that? Well, it is like a mantra. It's one of these reminders that I need to see every day. Because if I'm going to be even trying to be better at communicating, the key is I got to listen. I got to learn to listen because we are not good listeners.
Yeah.
Dentists are not good listeners. And I'll prove this to you. And again, this perhaps will resonate to many in your audience. And I would urge whichever clinical doctor is there just to grab their assistant to answer this question. So my assumption is, here's what it happens. The doctor is sitting in front of the patient and they are giving the patient an explanation of what is happening in their mouth clinically. And so here's the dentist, very knowledgeable, quote unquote, good communicator, say, Mrs. Jones, you know, there is probably some over eruption of your teeth due to the absence of your mandibular teeth, and so there's a pneumatized sinuses, and therefore we may need, and the patient goes like this, right? So here we are, like, giving the patient a mini lecture.
Mm-hmm.
The patient is nodding very courteously, letting us know that she's with us. The second we leave the operatory, the patient will turn to the assistant and ask, what the hell did you
talk? It's true.
And please, please, just go for the test. Ask your assistants if you get that consistently, which just comes to show that we really are bad communicating. And so, just food for thought. I mean, we can have a full program on that if you want at some point.
Oh, we will. We definitely will. And I want, you know, in terms of terminal dentition, you and I were talking before we went live. One of the things that you're passionate about is creating a clear-cut parameters, you know, creating a solution for each given patient. That's a lot what you do in your workshops, is giving people, you know, dentists, the ideas or the framework for parameters and how we treat this. Because, you know, patients, it's mind-boggling. when it comes to learning more about what's going on in terminal dentition. Give us some perspective on how you see these parameters when it comes to treating a patient.
Right. Yeah. So as we said a while ago, the problem with simplifying or attempting to simplify is falling the trap of oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
And so when a patient comes in, and again, we essentially have these two types of situations, patients that are losing their teeth out of, you know, advanced decay, mm-hmm. essentially structurally the teeth are damaged, or B, that they are periodontally damaged, right? And so which route can we go for therapy? And so granted, as we have these discussions with any patient, the first thing they're thinking, or among the first things that patients are thinking, is how much is this going to cost me?
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot blame them. That definitely has to be part of their mental equation.
Right.
But the cost has to be a consequence of what is it that, what would be the best solution given my clinical situation?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I learned is that we cannot under nor overestimate the patient's budget. We have to be very clear, letting them know what their problem is. You know, Frank Spear for years has lectured on the concept of the tour of the mouth. So he'll walk the patients through a tour of the mouth. I like calling it the buyer's journey. And in fact, you probably know this, but in marketing, there's this concept of the buyer's journey.
Yeah.
And we, as buyers, you know, we essentially go through a three-stage process when we buy anything. We go through an awareness stage, then we go through a consideration stage, and then we go through a decision stage. So the awareness stage is essentially understanding what is the problem. And your problem may be, I need a new car. My old car is not doing it for me anymore. So that's the problem. So then you realize that you need a new car. Then you go to the dealership and realize you want a new car. And then you go through the consideration stage. Well, I can buy this type of car or this type of car or this type of car based on my family needs, based on my age, based on my middle age crisis, based on whatever you have in mind, and then ultimately leads to that solution. And so it's pretty much the same here. Patient walks in losing their teeth. Well, we gotta talk to them and make them aware of not only their condition, but what would it entail for them to lose their teeth? What are the consequences of inaction?
Mm-hmm.
Or the consequences of taking action A, B, or C? Then once you do that, they can sit down and very well go through the consideration stage, which means, okay, they've given me these three solutions. And my recommendation is never give patients more than three solutions. You know, there's this amazing book called The Paradox of Choice, mm-hmm. by Barry Schwartz, a phenomenal psychologist that does a lot of, you know, research on behavioral psychology. And we know, and this is scientifically proven, that the more options we have, the more we may regret the solution we picked.
Right.
I'll give you an example. You're going to dinner tonight and you ask your wife, so honey, where do you want to go to dinner? And you have 10 options. If you dial it down to two or three options and you go, do you want to go here or here? Trust me, at the end of the evening, there won't be buts and ifs about, you know, we could have gone Chinese or we could have gone Indian. Just narrow it down. And so as dentists, again, we, as much as we try not to, but we get to be pretty complex when explaining things.
Yeah.
And so again, there's that sweet spot between giving a full lecture of dentistry and oversimplifying. So you need to have a sweet spot in the middle in which, again, when you go through that consideration stage, you tell the patient, well, you have these three distinctive options. And we typically teach these three options at Spear. We either go for a removable solution, okay, which means we're going to be placing perhaps some implants or not, but you're going to have a removable solution, either a bar and clip, some locators, etc. B, we can do a fixed hybrid solution, which means we're going to be placing four implants, and the name All on Four will resonate quite a bit in your audience because it's a huge name, that a branding name, if you will, that people utilize, which now resonates also in the minds of many patients. And then we could have like more implants, a more sophisticated solution in which we're utilizing perhaps more crown bridge type of solution, which is called implant-supported fixed-dial prosthesis. So we essentially need to explain to the patient what these three solutions entail.
Yeah.
Now, it's not only about, you know, because again, there's going to be a price tag linked to the three solutions. And of course, you'll progressively go higher as you go from removable fixed hybrid to the implant fixed restoration. But the patient has to see the value of going one versus the other.
Right.
Not only the value, but also the price you pay. And I'll tell you momentarily something that has to be very well understood. Because in order to get a fixed hybrid restoration, one of the prerequisites is to have the adequate restorative space for the materials.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some patients may have that space already created because of the bone loss that they experience, but some patients will need to go through a ton of bone reduction because they're losing their teeth out of decay, and so there is no bone loss. And if that is not succinctly explained to the patient, they wouldn't know any better.
Right.
And so I'm not saying that's not the right solution. I'm just saying we need to explain these things. Yeah. And part of the reason here, Kurt, is that this ultimately may become a cookie cutting approach in which now every patient gets the same. And I'll give you a story, which is pretty fascinating. A good buddy of mine, an excellent surgeon that practices in California, one day, we're very good friends, and almost bragging one day, he told me how every single patient he treats ends up looking exactly the same.
Hmm.
Okay, which means he's so good, he may convert any situation into something that looks the same. And, you know, that sounds like for me, that's consistency. Wow, this guy's really good. And that's one take on the message. The one part that bothers me or makes me uncomfortable about that message is, well, if every patient ends up looking the same, I know as a fact that not every patient walks in looking the same, which means that you're converting every patient into one size fit all solution. And that's part of what we're trying the dental community to understand. What is the price to pay to convert every patient to one solution? Now, I'll tell you obviously what happens is that if you have a one size fit all, the reality is that you get really good at doing things because you have definitive clear cut parameters. So all you look at is bone reduction, implant placement, you know, within the arch, certain clinical parameters that we go for. And for sure, you do this consistently day and night, you get really, really good. The problem, you know, there's this book that I love called The Power of Noticing, you know, or this other book called Blindside in Leadership. We sometimes close one eye in order to see whatever we feel is preferable from a quote unquote clinical, convenience.
Mm-hmm.
It simplifies things in our protocol. And when we start now having all the patients fall into one category, we may end up falling in this notion of over-treating conditions.
Yeah.
Is that making sense?
It makes perfect sense. Now, you also, as you're talking about describing the treatment planning process and being honest with patients and giving them, you know, the ability to choose, you mentioned before, you know, dispelling, one of the things that you're passionate about is dispelling that rumor that implants are forever. Like you're honest with patients because sometimes they've been told by other people when it comes to terminal dentition, this implant's going to last forever, but nothing lasts forever. Is that correct?
You better believe it, Kirk. In fact, I'm just about to release an article that talks about, you know, the biggest lie in clinical dentistry, which is implants are forever, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, you know, if you look at, this is going to be a crazy example that I'm going to post here. But,
I love it. Go crazy. Come on.
But if you look at what Goebbels, who was, you know, the chief of Nazi propaganda back in the Second World War, you know, did, he was a malicious genius of marketing. He used to say, you say a lie enough times, it becomes a truth. Mm-hmm. It becomes the truth. And so I don't know how this happened, but lo and behold, most patients have this preconceived idea that implants are forever. They walk into our practice saying, okay, so implants are forever, right? Once you do this, doc, I'm good to go, right, for the rest of my life. And so we have to fight this, preconceived idea, and it's got to be done communicating it the right way. And so we have to have this conversation with patients, because if we don't, and if we just come along with this, yeah, you're going to be great forever, then this is going to come back and haunt us, because nothing is forever.
Right. Let me say, let's say if I'm a young dentist, I'm like, Ricardo, I totally understand, but I get that question every day. So how should I handle it? How do you handle that when patients say?
So there you go. You know, first of all, I have this conversation to patients about the hostile environment of the oral cavity. Mm-hmm. Okay. So think about, and now you are Mr. Jones. Okay, Kirk, you know nothing about dentistry. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Jones, I love your shirt, by the way. Let me talk to you about the hostile environment of the oral cavity. Mm-hmm. So think about this for a second, whether you know this or not, but your mouth is filled with bugs, you know? Even in the most natural conditions, we have a whole host, we have a zoo in the mouth. Now these bugs may get organized and create problems for us, either create decay or they be more, lenient towards creating problems in the soft tissue, in the bone. So bugs are there, regardless of what we do. So that's right there, one aspect of the hostile environment. Secondly, we thermocycle every day. What does this mean, thermocycle? What did you have for breakfast? Well, you probably had a large boiling hot coffee for breakfast. And then you're gonna have, a nice sports drink, or ice water. So hot, cold, cold, hot, cold. What does that mean? That every time we put something cold, every body in our mouth is going to go through some type of contraction. Every time we do something hot, there's going to be some expansion. Now, we think about having different materials, they will expand and contract at different rates. So that right there, we're thermocycling all the time. Thirdly, we use teeth for mastication 3 times a day at least. And sometimes what we chew on are not, marshmallows. We're going hard on hard foods. Thirdly, sometimes we use teeth for things other than we should be using teeth for. Nail biting, pen biting, opening plastic bags, you name it. Fourth, that's habits. Fourth, sometimes, and this is something that you're gonna see across the board, stress pays a toll, and everybody we know is sort of stressed. And how does that translates in the patient's mouth? Well, we have a bunch of bruxers as well that are exerting excess pressure, excess force in their teeth. So if you're losing your teeth because you have all these potential issues, you have bugs, you're thermocycling, you're using your teeth for things you shouldn't be utilizing, you're abusing your dentition, where is it written that you're not going to be doing that for your implant-supported solution?
Right.
So again, based on the fact that natural teeth are awesome, we age, and so do our teeth and our dentition ages as well.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a great quote by phenomenal clinician Clark Stanford from University of Iowa. He says, patients age underneath our beautiful, sophisticated dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? That everything else will age, but not the dentistry? And so for those young dentists, please spare yourself. Never, ever fall in the trap of saying, yes, Mrs. Jones, I'll give you the solution. It's going to be forever.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go that route. And think about this next line for a second. If you go to amputee.org and you see how much is a prosthetic limb typically guaranteed for, well, it doesn't go beyond 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you go through hip replacement, how much does that go for? And you can ask any orthopedic surgeon. There is a shelf life for that.
Yeah.
How about breast implants? How about ear or eye implant? Eye implant is a pretty cool prosthesis here, because it may seem like you have a natural eye, but you cannot see through it. And so the reality of it all is that sometimes when we're selling things, we do a lousy job, getting so excited about, having the patient understand how much we're already doing for them. But one thing we're not doing for them is promise things for life.
Right.
We cannot and should not do that. OK, Okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, and I know you're very passionate about this, as am I, the young dentist and even the mature dentist. When you're putting these two together, you got the terminal dentition and the fully edentulous patient. This is an important thing that's on the horizon for dentistry. And you guys teach some very sound treatment strategies, thought process. You know what I love most? It's the thought process. It's not so much the step-by-step. Give us some perspective on this and tell us. Now, you teach this course. You have a course coming up here at Spear on that very subject, where it's treating the terminal dentition and the fully edentulous patient. Put those together. Tell us what we're learning and what happens in that process.
Yeah, so great question. So the first thing and foremost, you know, what's really sexy for young dentists and for dentists out there is being good in aesthetics, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so I'm awesome with aesthetics. And some people may choose, you know, to utilize the, of course, available digital tools that we have, and you mentioned Chris Coachman, who's done an incredible job, you know, of spreading the word worldwide about it, and that's awesome. And Chris and I, as you know, are very, very close friends, yep. and we have mutual respect and love for each other. And essentially, what I respect most about Chris is that he put together information that was not new. It's information that we've been teaching for years, but it just becomes now more available. And more, how should I say, digestible in many ways for young, sometimes inexperienced clinicians. Well, the reality is that all of these concepts from aesthetics, you know, I used to have a faculty at the University of Washington used to say, there's nothing new in dentistry under the sun. Everything is like a rehash of what was thought about years ago. And if you trace it back, you know, to mid last century, the true gurus of aesthetics were the folks that were thinking about doing complete dentures. Mm-hmm. Because right there, you had an individual that lost their teeth. Individuals that lost their teeth, and then they had to figure out how on earth to put teeth where there no longer are. And so all the different parameters that we utilize from a position standpoint, you know, midline, incisal plane, occlusal plane, gingival levels, interincisal angles, how the teeth match, tooth shape, everything right here was thought of and put together by those gurus of the old era, if you will, the Lombardis, the Frosch, the Fishers, all these incredible, you know, pioneers of aesthetic dentistry. Then came Rufinock, and he essentially rehashed these concepts and put them together. Then came, the Fradianis and all these guys, that, once again, Pascal Magnier, these iconic dentists that are, I know, so near and dear to us, you know, in the dental circuit. At the end of the day, none of them will let me lie when I say all these concepts stem from complete denture literature. Mm-hmm. And so we have to go back, and you know, doing complete dentures, removal, is not sexy. So I get the young dentist saying, man, I don't want to go that route. Mm-hmm. But this is a bullet you have to bite if you want to play your A game in aesthetic dentistry. You got to rethink for a second. And again, digital smile design is amazing because it gives you the ability to look at things digitally. But you got to go through the 3D motion. You got to also understand, you know, what a denture looks like in a patient. And you got to go through that exercise of seeing, you know, how you affect phonetics. And so that's part of the essential elements that, if taught right, they're awesome. Yeah. And part of the problem of most kids, and I'm going to say this, you know, in a very respectful way, but a lot of the faculty that would teach this at mainstream universities or most universities, you know, were older gentlemen, many of them in the military. And I had the privilege of having, faculty of mine from the military that taught me that route. But I was, bear in mind that I was doing a specialty program. I was being, you know, trained to be a prosthodontist. So that was a must to do. Now, in today's GP world, the reality is that GPs today perform, especially those that come to your show, come to Spear, you know, that are active with DSD. These are people that truly have the desire to excel. Mm-hmm. And if you do have the desire to excel and renew, you know, what you learn from dental school, you have to bite the bullet and go back to those essential elements to understand tooth position. And so we got to teach those essential elements. We have to. And so from there, as I said, because everything starts with where do teeth belong in the patient's face? Yeah. And of course, again, you can see that digitally. But again, what we do in DSD or or DSD-like protocols, because I've been doing my own quote-unquote DSD, and that doesn't mean that I won't be doing Christian's DSD, which is phenomenal. I'm so used to using my system, which essentially is very similar. It's a phenomenal tool that allows us to treatment plan, and you hit the nail on the head. What we try our best to do is to help as educators for our, you know, audiences to treatment plan. And the problem with, you know, the lecture circuit, there is so much show and tell. There is so much, look at my photography. And what's happening today with social media, I mean, the Instagram dentist, and don't get me wrong, I'm not going at them in a voracious way or have nothing against them. I'm just saying that now you take a good picture and you become a guru in Instagram based on one good picture. Sometimes we see phenomenal dentistry, but sometimes we see dentistry that sucks. But the photography is awesome. And so The bottom line, as educators, we have to do our best not to create cookbook recipes, because that's what the type of ABCs that I'm more inclined towards. You go through these elements, thought process, and then you decide. You know, do this, then do this, then do this.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we give them. We go through a ton of decision trees. We go a ton through, you know, techniques. But the bottom line is, you teach somebody how to fish, it won't start.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You gotta give different tools, not only one tool. And my problem with the cookie cutting approach is it oversimplifies.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm just going to encourage you to see, I've seen Ricardo so many times in action. And so if you're looking to improve your skills on this, which is absolutely, and the thought process, and learn how to fish in a way that you'll never starve when it comes to the terminal dentition, you're going to want to check this course out. Now, the fully treating the terminal dentition and the fully edentulous patient, it's coming up. Now, is it coming up? It's at Spear Education, which is in Scottsdale, Arizona. Tell us just a little bit about the course. We're going to post a link to it. And what are they going to experience in that course, Ricardo, when they get a chance to go out there?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm going to be a little bit biased when I say it's an awesome course. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you this much. It's 20 years of thought process gone, you know, in the putting together of this course. And I'm privileged to do this particular course with Darren Deister, who's another phenomenal prosthodontist and also faculty at Spear. And again, we went back and forth, you know, thinking about how to make this course, how can this course be a difference, make a difference in the clinicians that come see it.
Yeah.
And so we essentially go through, you know, again, the whys. As you know, everything starts with why are we doing this? And then we essentially go through, you know, that concept of buyer's journey. So we talk about the solutions, what each solution entails. We talk about how do we communicate that to patients, which is fundamental. Because if you don't have a patient that's willing to go for it, then it's useless.
Right.
And a lot of it has to do with, well, I don't get these patients. And we get that all the time. And these are patients that knock on your door every day. You just don't care to see them. Or you just care to put them in a section that basically is that category of, I'll just, you know, let time go by until things deteriorate more, and then I'll refer out.
Mm-hmm.
And referring patients out to specialists when you are not able to handle their condition is not necessarily a bad thing. But it's so much cooler to refer a patient out when you know exactly what the patient needs. And then you tell the patient, well, this is exactly what you're going to go through. I'm not going to do it. This other guy's going to do it, but he works for me. So that way, the referral from GP to surgeon or to prosthodontist has a totally different twist, as opposed to, this is not in my wheelhouse, sayonara. Because you want that patient back, and you want the patient's family back. So you got to be careful how to let patients loose at this point in time.
Yeah. Amen, my friend. Hey, my friend. So we're going to post a link here in the body of the post, and you can click on it. And Ricardo, you guys have been so grateful to offer a discount for people watching the Best Practices Show. which is Kirk 200, one word, no spaces. Just put that in the comment section and the people at Spear will take care of that. So check it out. Check out Ricardo if you see him speaking anywhere. And I'm sure you'll be available for questions if people want to reach out to you, Ricardo, on this particular subject. So Ricardo, I am so grateful. I know how busy you are. You got a lot of practices. You're speaking everywhere. And I'm just grateful for every minute that you give us. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else who's watching the show. So thank you guys for watching the show. If you did enjoy the show, which I hope you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for shows that you want to see with Ricardo and anything else, and we'll do our best to line it up. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.